Welcome to Base by Base, the papercast that brings genomics to you wherever you are. Today, we're diving into a really significant area in pediatric medicine, congenital heart disease, CHD. It affects about 1% of all live births, which is, well, it's a huge number when you think about it globally.
It really is. And, you know, for you listening, one of the biggest challenges is this diagnostic gap. Even though CHD is relatively common, we can only pinpoint a genetic cause in maybe 35% of those kids.
Right. And it's even less if they don't have other clear signs pointing to a specific syndrome.
Exactly. And that's incredibly frustrating for clinicians, for families. Finding that genetic root, it's often the very first step towards figuring out prognosis, maybe even future treatments.
Definitely. And for years, the focus has often been on the usual suspects, those big developmental genes, the ones that act like master switches for building the heart. But what if the answer, at least for a newly emerging syndrome affecting the heart, face, and brain, wasn't in one of those specific switches? What if it was actually a problem deeper down in the cells like basic power grid?
That's precisely the fascinating shift in perspective this research brings. It asks, okay, what happens if the issue lies within the fundamental machinery for making proteins, the translation system itself?
Which sounds like it should cause problems everywhere, right? Not just in specific spots.
You'd think so. If the protein factory has a problem, you might expect total cellular chaos, not these specific developmental issues in the heart or the face. The surprise here is really the specificity of the problems that arise.
Before we get into the details, we really should acknowledge the huge international effort behind this. This wasn't just one lab.
Absolutely. Teams including those at the Cardiac Genome Clinic and the Program in Developmental Stem Cell and Cancer Biology at SickKids in Toronto were central, but it truly was a global collaboration, essential for finding enough individuals with these rare variants.
So just to recap the background, CHD is common, often serious, and finding the genetic basis is crucial, especially when it occurs alongside other issues, what we call syndromic cases.
Yes, and this deep dive focuses on two specific genes, EIF3A and EIF3B.
And when we say fundamental machinery, we really mean it. These aren't niche developmental regulators. They code for core parts of the eukaryotic initiation factor 3 complex, the EIF3 complex.
Right. Think of EIF3 as this enormous multi-tool essential for starting protein production. It's the largest of the translation initiation factors.
It's a main job.
It has to grab the messenger RNA, the instructions, and make sure it docks correctly onto the small ribosomal subunit, the 4DS subunit. That's the trigger. That's what kicks off the whole protein synthesis process. Without EIF3 working properly, you just don't make proteins efficiently.
And we have ways to measure how critical a gene is, right? Like looking at how much the human population tolerates losing one copy.
Exactly. We can use metrics like the PLOEUF score. It basically tells you how intolerant a gene is to being knocked out, to loss of function. Low score means high intolerance.
Danger zone.
Pretty much. And for these two, EIF3A has a PLOEUF score of 0.18. EIF3B is even lower, just 0.11.
Wow.
Yeah, those are incredibly low scores. It screams that losing even one functional copy is highly likely to cause serious problems. The system just can't cope well with half the dose.
And interestingly, EIF3B wasn't completely unknown in this context, was it? It was sitting right in a region known to be deleted in some people, the 7p22.3 microdeletion.
That's right. That deletion was already linked to developmental delay, certain facial features, and specifically heart defects like tetralogy of Fallot.
But that region has multiple genes.
It does. It was a bit of a puzzle which gene in that deleted segment was the real driver. The study basically points the finger squarely at EIF3B. It makes a very strong case that EIF3B loss is the key issue there.
Okay, so how did the researchers build this case? How do you connect these specific genes to a new syndrome?
Well, it started with finding the patients. This involved international matchmaking using databases and networks like Genedex, Gene Matcher, Genomics England, plus clinical cohorts like the one at SickKids.
Casting a wide net.
A very wide net. And through that, they assembled this cohort of 18 individuals who had variants in either EIF3A or EIF3B. 14 had EIF3B variants, 4 had EIF3A.
And these variants were identified using modern sequencing, I assume? Exomes, genomes?
Yep. Massively parallel sequencing. And the crucial finding was that most of these variants were de novo,
meaning new in the child, not inherited.
Exactly. Spontaneous mutations. And they were predominantly loss-of-function variants, meaning they likely break the gene's function. That de novo pattern strongly suggests these variants are causative and act in a dominant fashion.
Okay, so you have the patients, you have the suspicious de novo variants. How do you prove cause and effect?
That's where the functional validation comes in. They turn to an animal model, the zebrafish.
Ah, the see-through fish embryos.
Precisely. They used CRISPR-Cas9, the gene editing tool, to create zebrafish that completely lack the corresponding genes IF3S10 for EIF3A and IF3B for EIF3B.
Why zebrafish? You mentioned transparency.
Yeah, they develop fast outside the mother, and you can literally watch their organs, like the heart and the facial structures, form in real time under a microscope. So you can directly observe the effects of knocking out these genes. They looked at everything, heart structure, heart function, brain size, cartilage formation.
Basically checking if the fish showed problems similar to the human patients.
That's the goal, creating that link between the gene disruption and the specific anatomical or functional problems.
All right, let's talk findings. First, the human cohort, those 18 individuals. What was the clinical picture?
It was pretty consistent, actually, though, with some variability. The most striking feature was the heart. 15 out of the 18 had some form of CHD.
That's a huge proportion.
It is. And if you include previously reported cases linked to that 7P deletion involving EIF3B, the rate goes up to about 79%.
And what kind of heart defects?
The most common was tetralogy of Fallot TOF, which is a complex defect needing major surgery. But they also saw things like ventricular septal defects, VSDs, atrial septal defects, ASDs, and bicuspid aortic valves. Serious structural heart problems.
Okay, heart defects, check. What about the other features suggested craniofacial?
Also very common. Around 82% overall showed distinct craniofacial features. Things like ptosis, which is droopy eyelids, downslanting eyes, and significantly, four of the individuals with EIF3B variants had cleft lip and palate.
So heart and face strongly implicated. And the neurodevelopmental aspect.
That was present too, though maybe more variable between individuals. Features included developmental delay, speech and language problems, sometimes intellectual disability, and also behavioral issues like ADHD or features of autism spectrum disorder.
It really paints a picture of a multi-system disorder, doesn't it? Affecting heart, face, and brain development.
Absolutely. A recognizable pattern was emerging.
Now, let's pivot to the zebrafish. Did knocking out these genes in the fish support this pattern? Did it cause specific defects or just make the fish generally sick?
Oh, it was specific and devastatingly so, particularly in the fish that lost both copies of the gene, the homozygous mutants.
What happened to them?
They had severe, completely penetrant developmental problems. They didn't survive past about 5 days, which, you know, aligns with how critical these genes seem from those low PLOUF scores we talked about.
And the heart, specifically.
The heart development was clearly disrupted. The mutants had underdeveloped hypoplastic heart tubes. And critically, the heart tube failed to loop correctly.
Meaning it didn't twist into the proper shape.
Right. Instead of forming the complex chambers, it just stayed as a more primitive linear tube. Functionally, their hearts were barely working, massive fluid buildup around the heart, pericardial edema, and severely reduced irregular heartbeats. The measurements, the arrhythmia scores, showed profound dysfunction.
So a major failure in heart morphogenesis.
A complete failure, essentially. And the other defects lined up remarkably well with the human syndrome, too.
Like the craniofacial issues.
Yes. The mutant fish had much smaller brains, small eyes, and crucially, by 5 days, they had a complete absence of craniofacial cartilage. No jaw structures, no pharyngeal arches formed.
Wow, a total block.
A total block. And there was this really neat specific parallel. One of the human patients with an EIF3A variant had a condition called coloboma, an eye defect. They observed that same specific defect in the I3S10 mutant fish.
That's strong evidence. The fish model really seemed to mirror the human condition.
It provided powerful functional validation. Disrupting these core translation factors causes this specific constellation of developmental failures in heart, face, and brain precursors.
Okay, so putting it all together, the human variants were mostly de novo loss of function. The fish knockouts caused matching defects. The underlying mechanism seems pretty clear then.
Yes, it points strongly towards haploid insufficiency. Having only one good working copy of EIF3A or EIF3B just isn't enough. 50% function isn't sufficient for normal development of these specific systems.
And this neatly solves that old puzzle about the 7p22.3 microdeletion too.
It really does. It solidifies the idea that EIF3B haploinsufficiency is the main driver of the heart and neurodevelopmental issues seen in people with that deletion. The other genes in the deleted segment were likely, you know, bystanders. EIF3B seems to be the critical dosage-sensitive gene in that region.
But that brings us back to that central puzzle, the sort of translation paradox. Why does messing with a piece of machinery used by every cell for every protein cause such specific problems, mainly in the heart, face, and brain?
Right, that's the core biological question, isn't it? And it forces us to think about translation in a more nuanced way. The leading hypothesis revolves around something called translational selectivity.
Meaning the EIF3 complex doesn't just treat all messenger RNAs equally?
Exactly. It's not just a simple on switch for everything. There's growing evidence that different subunits of the EIF3 complex, including A and B, might preferentially bind to certain types of mRNA transcripts. They might boost or control the translation of specific subsets of messages.
Okay, so it's like a dispatcher that prioritizes certain instructions over others.
That's a good analogy. And which instructions might be particularly sensitive to having less EIF3 around?
Let me guess, instructions for things needed during rapid development.
Precisely. Transcripts involved in things like cell proliferation, differentiation, migration, building complex tissues, morphogenesis. And if you look at the specific structures affected in this syndrome, parts of the heart, the facial skeleton, certain nerves, many of them originate from a very special cell type.
Neural crest cells.
These are incredibly important migratory cells in the embryo. They travel out and contribute to forming the heart outflow tract, craniofacial bones and cartilage, peripheral neurons, and more.
And they're known to be quite sensitive to genetic dosage problems, aren't they?
Extremely sensitive. Their development relies on having just the right amount of key regulatory proteins at the right time. So the theory is that EIF3A and EIF3B haploinsufficiency leads to reduced translation, a kind of starvation of the specific mRNAs that these neural crest cells desperately need to do their job properly.
Ah, so the general machinery failure causes specific problems because those neural crest-derived tissues are uniquely vulnerable to running low on certain proteins.
That's the thinking. It explains the tissue specificity. The system fails where the demand, or perhaps the reliance on EIF3-mediated translation for certain key transcripts, is highest in these developing neural crest derivatives.
That makes a lot of sense. So the big implication for clinicians, and for you listening, is that we've potentially found a cause for a subset of previously unexplained CHD and related syndromes.
Absolutely. EIF3A and EIF3B should definitely be on the list of genes to check when investigating CHD, especially if there are accompanying facial or neurodevelopmental features. They should be included in diagnostic gene panels for these conditions, for neurocrestopathies.
Now, the researchers did point out a limitation, or maybe just an interesting observation, comparing the humans and the fish.
Yes, it's an important point about variability. Remember, the human patients typically have one bad copy and one good copy, they're heterozygous. But the severe, fully penetrant defects in the fish were seen when both copies were knocked out the homozygous state.
So, humans get sick with only a 50% reduction, while the fish needed a 100% loss to show the really dramatic effects described. What does that difference tell us?
It strongly suggests that other genetic factors modifiers are at play in humans, that remaining 50% activity from the one good copy might be right on the edge of sufficiency.
So an individual's overall genetic background could push them one way or the other.
Exactly. Slight variations in other genes involved in development or even other parts of the translation machinery might determine whether that 50% level of EIF3A or B is enough, or if the system tips over into disease. This likely explains why the human phenotype, while showing a pattern, still has that variability, why one person might have severe heart defects and another milder neurodevelopmental issues.
It highlights that complex interplay between a major gene defect and the rest of the genome.
Definitely. The single gene mutation creates the vulnerability, but the background genetics probably fine-tune the specific outcome.
Okay, so let's try to crystallize the take-home message from this deep dive.
I think it's that we've now defined a new distinct genetic syndrome caused by loss of function variants in EIF3A and EIF3B. It's an autosomal dominant condition characterized by this trio of features: cardiovascular, craniofacial, and neurodevelopmental.
And fundamentally, it highlights that core cellular machinery, things we think of as purely housekeeping, can actually play critical tissue-specific roles in development through mechanisms like translational regulation.
Absolutely. It challenges the simple divide between housekeeping and developmental genes.
Which leads to a really interesting thought to leave you with. If something as fundamental as the EIF3 translation initiation complex can have such specific developmental consequences because of this transcript selectivity, what other basic cellular machines might be doing the same thing?
That's a great question. Could components of the ribosome itself, or the spliceosome that processes RNA, also have these hidden regulatory roles, subtly controlling the output of specific genes crucial for building organs in a way that's sensitive to dosage?
Are there other fundamental complexes secretly moonlighting as developmental regulators?
It certainly opens up new avenues to explore in developmental genetics.
This episode was based on an open access article under the CC BY 4.0 license. You can find a direct link to the paper and the license in our episode description. If you enjoy this, follow or subscribe in your podcast app and leave a 5-star rating. If you'd like to support our work, use the donation link in the description. Thanks for listening and join us next time as we explore more science base by base.